You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Arapaho County News, read by Tim Elliott. This is being recorded on June 6th, 2024. Today we will be reading the following main articles. Deceased suspect and Aurora officer who fired fatal shot during May 23rd arrest identified by the Sentinel. AANHPI community plans new, quote, social fabric, end quote, center with $500,000 federal grant by the Sentinel. Rabid bat found in Inglewood, two people being treated by Nina Joss. Devon Williams car theft arraignment postponed to fourth date by Elizabeth Slay. Quote, more to life than yourself, end quote. Friends, family honor Deet Sr., Littleton Vet, by Nina Joss. Littleton Mobile Home Park residents get closer to making offer on land, also by Nina Joss. And following up with miscellaneous articles. Deceased suspect and Aurora officer who fired fatal shot during May 23rd arrest identified. Coroner official said the man was Kylan Lewis, 37, of Denver. Police and county officials have identified a man shot and killed by an Aurora police officer May 23rd during a SWAT unit call and attempted arrest, and they've identified the officer involved in the shooting. Coroner officials said the man was Kylan Lewis, 37, of Denver. Officials said he died May 25th from injuries sustained from a shooting 2 days after his attempted arrest in Aurora. Friends and family of Lewis posted laments on social media, and a GoFundMe account has been started in his name. The shooting occurred just before noon at Edenbrook Condominiums at 384 South Ironton Street in West Central Aurora. Police said Denver and Aurora Police SWAT units went to the complex earlier in the morning and set up to arrest Lewis in connection with a May 5th Denver attempted homicide case. Aurora Police spokesperson Matthew Longshore and Aurora Police were assisting in a Denver case to make the arrest. The SWAT team was called to assist when the suspect was located driving a red sedan in Aurora, Longshore said. The suspect arrived at the apartment complex just before noon. Aurora SWAT officers approached Lewis as he exited his car and attempted to arrest him. During the interaction, an Aurora SWAT officer fired his weapon, striking the suspect, Longshore said. Officers provided medical treatment until rescuers arrived. Lewis was taken to a nearby hospital and died from his injuries 2 days later. Police identified the officer who shot Lewis as Officer Michael Deke, a 12-year veteran of the police department. Longshore said Deke has been assigned to the SWAT unit for over 8 years. Deke was placed on administrative leave, which is standard police department policy. Police have begun a shooting investigation as well as an internal affairs investigation. The 18th Judicial District will be part of a critical incident response team, providing an independent investigation into the shooting. Police on Thursday released a produced video addressing a May 5th Aurora officer-involved shooting. In the video, Interim Police Chief Heather Morris offers some detail about the shooting, but states that the video was a new protocol for APD and an effort to provide, quote, transparency and accountability, end quote. It's unclear whether police will release a similar video focusing on the May 23rd officer-involved shooting. AANHPI community plans new, quote, social fabric, end quote, center with $500,000 federal grant. As Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Heritage Month comes to a close, Colorado's AANHPI community is one step closer to having a central location to celebrate their heritage. During a press conference Thursday, Colorado Asian Culture and Education Network announced their latest steps for a new community center. It will serve as a hub for resources, social services, and programming for AANHPI, immigrant and refugee communities. The community center, called Social Fabric, will be located at 67 Inverness Drive in Inglewood, near Centennial Airport, and is set to open in the first half of 2025, KACEN Director Annie Gua Van Dan said during the presentation. Van Dan also said that the community center will include office spaces for nonprofit organizations and businesses, serve as a gathering place for community members, be used as an events space for competitions and holidays, include health and wellness providers and services, have a library of bookstore highlighting AANHPI authors, and also be family-friendly. Van Dan said the need for this space started to rise in 2020, when anti-Asian hate crimes increased during the pandemic. She also explained that there was also a general need for Asian Americans to feel more visible and share their culture with their friends and community members. I know many of you, my friends in the community, have been a part of this vision for so long, Van Dan said while getting emotional. It's just very exciting. Also during the press conference, Colorado Rep. Jason Crow gave KACEN $500,000 in congressional appropriation funds, which will go to support the community center. I am very proud to represent this community for a lot of reasons, but one of the things I'm most proud of is the diversity of this community, Crow said. I'm honored with this $500,000 to help open Denver's first Asian American Social Fabric Community Center, which I think is going to be a model, not only for Colorado, but potentially the rest of the country. Judge finds Aurora violated state law, compels release of closed-door meeting recording. Lawmakers addressed City Council's doubts about court administrator and city attorney during pay discussion. By Max Levy, Sentinel, Colorado staff writer. A judge last week forced the City of Aurora to turn over a recording of a secret Aurora City Council committee meeting to the Sentinel, marking at least the second time since 2022 that the council, or a subgroup of the council, was found to have violated state law while meeting behind closed doors. City lawmakers met without informing or admitting the public to discuss the performance and pay of the city's four top appointed officials last October, including candid doubts about the court administrator and city attorney, whom they nonetheless recommended for raises. The discussion between Mayor Mike Kaufman and Mayor Pro Tem Dustin Zvonik, which also involved Director of Human Resources Ryan Lance and Performance Management Administrator Doreen Falcon, took place during a virtual meeting of the Council Appointee Evaluation and Compensation Committee. The court finds that the committee meeting involved public business, and therefore notice of an executive session was required if the meeting was not open to the public, Arapahoe County District Court Judge Elizabeth Beebe Voltz wrote in her May 5th, 15th ruling, in which she ordered the city to release a video recording of the meeting to the Sentinel. The newspaper asked Voltz to weigh in after the city turned down a formal request for the recording and petitioned the court to affirm that the recording was not subject to disclosure. Voltz instead ruled in favor of the Sentinel, citing the newspaper's last open meetings law case in her order. It is undisputed that the city failed to give notice of an executive session meeting, and the public was not admitted to the meeting, Voltz wrote. Where a public body fails to comply with the requirements for holding an executive session, the recordings or minutes of that session are open to the public. There do not appear to be any exceptions to this result. The four appointees, Court Administrator Candace Atkinson, City Attorney Dan Brotzman, City Manager Jason Batchelor, and Presiding Judge Sean Day, were not informed of or present for the meeting. Colorado's open meetings law allows local government bodies to meet in private, a circumstance known as an, quote, executive session, end quote, to discuss certain topics after satisfying a list of requirements that include informing the public about the meeting by publishing agenda information ahead of time. Judges have further interpreted the law to mean that when a government body fails to live up to the estate's expectations of transparency by not following the rules for closing a meeting to the public, that body can't claim the meeting was a legitimate executive session for the purposes of withholding records, such as audio and video recordings. Because the public wasn't notified about the October 13th meeting and three subsequent meetings of the same committee, the Sentinel requested the associated recordings from the city. The city said the three later meetings were, quote, inadvertently not recorded, end quote, despite the Colorado Open Meetings Law requiring that such closed-door meetings be recorded and the recordings be kept for at least 90 days. On May 21st, after Volz published her order, the city turned the recording over to the Sentinel. The case comes after a Colorado Court of Appeals panel found in December that Aurora City Council broke the law in 2022 when it voted to end censure proceedings against a member during an executive session. The Sentinel had asked for what was denied a recording of that meeting, which the panel ordered the city to release. The city has since asked the Colorado Supreme Court to hear the case, and the panel's order has been stayed pending a reply from the higher court. The Council Appointee Evaluation and Compensation Committee continued to hold unannounced closed-door meetings before and immediately after the Colorado Court of Appeals ruling. City spokesperson Ryan Luby wrote in an email after the October recording was released that city officials, quote, take open meeting requirements very seriously and continuously work with staff to ensure that all requirements are met, end quote. While we strive to have a flawless record in that regard, very infrequently mistakes might occur like they might at any organization, he said. Luby said the failure to publish information about the meetings ahead of time was the result of a, quote, misunderstanding, end quote, that took place when the responsibility for posting agendas online was transferred from one group of city employees to another. He also said the city was retraining its staff and introducing additional checks and balances to ensure the city complies with the law. As for the lawmakers who participated in the meeting, Zvonik was indignant after being emailed a list of questions, saying it was, quote, wildly inappropriate to have these conversations in public, end quote, and criticizing the Sentinel's decision to report on what happened during the unlawful executive session. If I, as an employer, can't have candid conversations with my employees or with my other executives about a particular employee's performance, because it could end up being in the newspaper, we just won't have them, Zvonik said. Even though Zvonik and Kaufman said during the executive session that they supported giving raises to Atkinson, Brotsman, and Day, despite the council having criticized the leadership and interpersonal skills of Atkinson and Brotsman, Zvonik told the Sentinel he supported the subsequent decision of the entire council to give Atkinson and Day raises while putting off the question of changing Brotsman's pay. We have a responsibility as a council to ensure that we have the right people in place and ensure that, to the best of our ability, their compensation reflects the value that they're providing to the residents of Aurora, Zvonik said. I don't think that we got that decision wrong with any of them. A December 27th letter sent from the city's Human Resources Department to Brotsman and shared with the newspaper by Luby, said that City Council would reconsider Brotsman's pay in 3 months' time. On March 25th, the city announced Brotsman would be retiring at the end of June. No recommendation on bachelor's pay emerged from the meeting. The city at that time was still negotiating bachelor's employment contract, as bachelor had just been elevated from interim city manager to the permanent city manager role. He and Day were ultimately given bonuses in addition to a raise for Day and a salary increase bachelor that was included in his contract. Kaufman declined to comment on the events of the October 13th meeting, writing in an email that it would be, quote, highly inappropriate to discuss personal matters publicly, end quote. Atkinson, too, did not want to comment on the concerns raised by the council, beyond saying that she, quote, had been here just a year at the time of this evaluation and am committed to meeting the expectations of council as well as its citizens in the coming years, end quote. I love living in Aurora and working with our city council, all of whom I admire, she wrote in an email. I am proud to serve the citizens of our city. Brotsman said he had not watched and would not watch the recording to continue to avoid a potential conflict of interest. The city's litigation of the Sentinel's records request was handled by third-party law firm Hoffman, Parker, Wilson, and Carberry, P.C., and Brotsman said Deputy City Attorney Jack Bjork had been responsible for coordinating with the firm. First Amendment attorney Steven Zansberg and the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press represented the Sentinel in the case. Through March 2024, the city incurred more than $40,000 in expenses, including the cost of hiring outside attorneys, to fight the release of the 2022 and 2023 executive session recordings requested by the Sentinel. Luby previously said the city's third-party attorneys are being paid from the city's general fund. Council committee reviewed appointee salaries raises. During the October 13th meeting of the Council Appointee Evaluation and Compensation Committee, Kaufman and Zavonik reviewed the Council's assessments of Atkinson, Brotsman, Batchelor, and Day, speaking frankly about what the Council as a whole may be willing to pay each of the four. The Court Administrator, City Attorney, City Manager, and Municipal Judge are the only city employees that directly report to the City Council. Per Aurora City Charter, all other employees report to one of the council's four direct appointees, making them the most senior non-elected officials in the city. Council members are also responsible for establishing salaries for the four, a process that begins in the Council Appointee Evaluation and Compensation Committee, which also reviews complaints related to the behavior of any of the four appointees or against council members. The committee consists of the chairperson of the Management and Finance Policy Committee, currently Councilmember Curtis Gardner, as well as the mayor and mayor pro tem. Gardner was absent from the October meeting. On October 13th, performance evaluations that had been completed by the appointees' co-workers and the appointees themselves were considered along with evaluations by the council, as Kaufman and Zavonik talked about how much money each appointee deserved. Atkinson and Brotsman received overall scores of 60.8% and 69.1% respectively from the council as a whole, while Batchelor and Day received scores of 87.7% and 92.9%. Council members scored Atkinson the lowest in the categories of, quote, organizational leadership, end quote, and, quote, elected body relationships, end quote. Kaufman said during the meeting that Atkinson, quote, did not do herself any favors, end quote, by giving unsatisfactory answers to questions about vacancies among court and jail staffers at a September budget workshop. As for Brotsman, Kaufman said he believed the council's skepticism was largely, quote, personality-driven, end quote, and that Brotsman had been doing a, quote, much better job, end quote, of communicating with the group. Brotsman earned the lowest scores in the categories of, quote, community forward slash stakeholder relationships, end quote, and, like Atkinson, quote, elected body relationships, end quote. Kaufman observed in response to the evaluations by council members that, quote, they're not crazy about Candace or Dan, but love Judge Day and, I think, love Jason. Atkinson and Brotsman scored their own performance higher than they were scored by the council, giving themselves scores of 94.4% and 86.1% respectively. The council praised the other two appointees, and Zvonik said he believed a bachelor's pay should reflect how he had guided the city through the 2023 retirement of former city manager Jim Twombly. Both Bachelor and Day scored themselves lower on their self-evaluations than they were scored by the council. Kaufman also described quelling past conflicts among city appointees and said that while Bachelor had been holding productive meetings with the other appointees as city manager, and although Kaufman did not expect, quote, those kinds of disputes that we've had in the past, end quote, the four nevertheless needed, quote, a venue to fall back on, end quote, in the form of quarterly meetings with Kaufman. The mayor would not explain the nature of the friction he alleged has occurred among council appointees. As for the pay of the four, Kaufman and Zvonik discussed paying a bonus today on top of a 5% base pay increase for him, Atkinson and Brotsman. Kaufman and Zvonik agreed that discussing bachelor's pay was premature since the city was at that time still negotiating bachelor's contract. They also agreed that the city should have an outside attorney review the final version rather than Brotsman, with Kaufman saying he suspected there was, quote, competition, end quote, between Bachelor and Brotsman. Zvonik argued that Brotsman and Day did not deserve comparable raises, saying he didn't, quote, see them as having the same, end quote, before he was interrupted by the mayor. Zvonik later said his comment was in reference to the differences in the performance between the two for Brotsman, and then the opposite faction is going to want to do nothing for Atkinson, end quote, which he later said referred to, quote, different points of view, end quote, among members, declined to elaborate further. Lance agreed with Zvonik's, quote, factions, end quote, comment at the time, as did Kaufman. The city council held at least two as a group after the October 13th executive session of the committee to discuss the pay for the four appointees. At the end of the process, Atkinson's annual base pay increased from $180,600 to $189,630, while Bachelor's increased from $274,500 to $330,000, and Day's increased from $193,131.54 to $202,788.14. Bachelor and Day also received bonuses of $27,450 and $20,279,000, respectively. Brotsman did not receive a pay raise or a bonus. A necklace may have saved a man's life by blocking a bullet. The shooting happened during an argument. The victim suffered only a minor puncture wound, by the Sentinel. Police in Commerce City say a man's sturdy necklace probably saved his life by blocking a bullet fired at his neck. The bullet lodged in the almost half-inch-wide, silver-colored metal chain in the shooting Tuesday night in Commerce City. The shooting happened during an argument. The victim, whose identity was not released, suffered only a minor puncture wound, the Commerce City Police Department wrote in a statement posted on Facebook. Police were unsure what the necklace was made of, but doubted it was silver, a soft metal unlikely to withstand a bullet, the statement said. The shooter was arrested on attempted homicide charges, according to police. He was scheduled to make a court appearance on Monday, according to court records. Rabid bat found in Inglewood, two people being treated. A bat in Inglewood has tested positive for rabies, bringing the state to a total number of 5 rabies cases so far this year, according to the Colorado Department of Health and Environment. 2 people were exposed to the bat, which was found in the area near Quincy Avenue and Santa Fe Drive, according to a press release from Arapahoe County on May 22nd. They have both begun treatment to prevent infection and illness, the release says. Rabies infection is a highly dangerous and potentially fatal disease transmitted primarily through scratches, bites, or saliva exposure from a rabid animal, the city of Inglewood said in a Facebook post. Any mammal can be infected, but local primary carriers are bats and skunks. The disease primarily affects the central nervous system, leading to severe brain disease and death if medical care is not received before symptoms start, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Rabies is usually fatal in humans once symptoms appear, and preventative treatment can be administered soon after exposure, the state health department says. In 2023, there were over 50 cases of rabid animals in Colorado, with one in Arapahoe County, according to the health department. Of those cases, 47 were in bats. This year, rabid animals have also been found in Boulder, El Paso, and Larimer counties. All of the infected animals found so far in 2024 have been bats. If you, a family member, or a pet has come in direct contact with a bat, especially if it was near Quincy Avenue and Santa Fe Drive, Arapahoe County Public Health recommends immediately reaching out to a health care provider at Arapahoe County Public Health at 303-734-4379 to evaluate risk and any need for treatment. It's important to take possible exposure to rabies seriously, even if it doesn't seem like a big deal, Melissa Adair, County Communicable Disease Epidemiology Manager, said in a press release. For example, if you have a bat in your home, it can be difficult to even know if you've been bitten, as bat bites are tiny, often painless, and can happen quickly while you're trying to catch the animal or are asleep. The State Health Department recommends that people stay away from wild animals and vaccinate their dogs, cats, pet ferrets, and mammalian livestock against rabies. If a person comes into contact with a bat or is bitten, they should report the animal to the county health department and call their doctor immediately. Devon Williams' car theft arraignment postponed to fourth date. Next court appearance for Inglewood school board members set for July 2nd. Inglewood Board of Education member Devon Williams' arraignment for a felony charge of car theft from 2019 was postponed to a fourth date during a late May court hearing. Adams County District Court Judge Jeffrey Smith granted a fourth arraignment date for Williams' case after his attorney said more time was needed to show mitigation. The docket now shows Williams' next court appearance is set for July 2nd at 8:30 a.m. in Division G. This latest update comes after Adams County District Court Judge Patrick H. Pugh said in an April 9th court appearance that the court would postpone the arraignment one more time until May 21st, pending potential resolution. Williams is represented by attorney Michael McCullough. The 2019 car theft allegation against Williams led to the issuance of an arrest warrant in 2020. The Glendale Police Department confirmed that Williams turned himself in to their agency for the outstanding warrant on November 6th, one day before his unopposed election to the Inglewood School Board. Meg Froelich, who represents Inglewood in the Colorado House, told the Inglewood Herald in December that she believes a felony conviction while in office could result in Williams' removal from the school board. Currently, the law states in CRS 22-31-129, quote, a school director office shall be deemed to be vacant upon the occurrence of any one of the following events prior to the expiration of the term of office. E, if the person who was duly elected or appointed is found guilty of a felony, end quote, Froelich said. Matt Cook, director of public policy and advocacy for the Colorado Association of School Boards, said in an email April 9th that the statute goes on to state what the proceedings of removal would look like. The statute then states, quote, At the next Board of Education meeting, immediately following the occurrence of any condition specified in subsection 1 of this section, the Board of Education of this district shall adopt a resolution declaring a vacancy in the school director office, and the Board of Education of the school district in which the vacancy occurs shall appoint a person to fill the vacancy within 60 days after the vacancy has occurred, Cook said. If the appointment is not made by the board within the 60-day period, the president of the board shall forthwith appoint a person to fill the vacancy. The appointment shall be evidenced by an appropriate entry in the minutes of the meeting, and the board shall cause a certificate of appointment to be delivered to the person so appointed. A duplicate of each certificate of appointment shall be forwarded to the Department of Education. The May court appearance came months after a reimbursement dispute between Williams and other members of board over Williams' unapproved mileage expenses, and after the 18th Judicial District Attorney's Office found no evidence in February to support Williams' claim that Englewood City Attorney Tamara Niles and City Manager Sean Lewis had committed the crime of retaliation against him. Williams' 2023 candidacy for the school board and subsequent board membership became controversial after the Englewood Herald revealed in October that Williams had two previous felony convictions, a finding of bad faith in a civil lawsuit, and outstanding arrest warrant and the ongoing felony car theft case. South Suburban Parks and Recreation appoints Kathy Frazzini to its board, by Nina Joss. In a process that was more transparent than in the past, the South Suburban Board of Directors appointed Lone Tree resident Kathy Frazzini to its board. Frazzini, who was selected after public interviews, will serve the remainder of the term left vacant by Susan Pye, who recently resigned. Frazzini was one of six candidates considered for the position at a special meeting on Wednesday night. During the meeting, the candidates answered questions from board members about equity, experience, and handling disagreements. South Suburban is recognized financially and or operationally as one of the top parks and recreation districts for its size in the United States, board member Pete Barrett said to the candidates. If you are appointed to this position, or even if you're not, and you decide to run in a year, you would be joining one of the outstanding organizations in the country, and you should be proud of that. Frazzini recently completed 8 years of service on the Lone Tree City Council. During her time there, she served 4 years as a mayor pro tem and has already worked with South Suburban on a subcommittee. She also has experience on the executive boards of the Colorado Municipal League and the Lone Tree Arts Center Guild. Frazzini works in the software industry, where she has held leadership roles. She has 4 children and captains a tennis team that plays at the Lone Tree tennis courts. I have spent a lot of time on other boards and commissions over time, so I think I can bring to bear some good team dynamics and the ability to assist in civil discourse as a group, Frazzini said during her interview, which she attended via Zoom because she was in California for a business trip. Frazzini said she is an advocate for youth recreation and has a deep understanding of fiscal responsibility, helping Lone Tree navigate the COVID-19 pandemic. The board interviewed several other candidates for the role, including former Littleton City Council member Amy Conklin and former Centennial City Council members Mark Gatto and Kathy Turley. Elizabeth Watson, who ran in the 2023 South Suburban Board election, and Connor Nazo, a healthcare technology professional, were also interviewed. Centennial resident Claude Payne submitted an application but did not attend the special meeting. After the interviews, the board members discussed their priorities in choosing an appointee. They highlighted financial and prior board experience and a willingness to learn. An initial round of voting, conducted on secret ballots, resulted in a tie, with 2 board members voting for Frazzini and 2 voting for Gatto. There's kind of a dilemma that's created when you have a bunch of quality applicants, Barrett said. The decision is difficult, but you're still forced to make it. After more discussion, Frazzini was declared the winner in a second vote. Board member Keith Gardner thanked those who ran for the seat and said he was happy with how the appointment process has changed since his appointment last year. I, a year ago, went through the same process, albeit much different, which explains a lot of the ways we're doing things tonight, he said. Last year, the board did not publicly post candidate applications online ahead of the meeting and did not host public interviews as reported by the Littleton Independent. This year, it added both of these steps to the process. Executive Director Rob Hanna said community feedback asking for more transparency led to the changes. Board member Pam Eller said the board was grateful for the opportunity to improve the process. Frazzini will be sworn in at the board's June 12th meeting. She will serve in her interim role until 2025, at which point she will have the opportunity to run for a full term. Quote, more to life than yourself, end quote. Friends, family honor Dietz, Sr., Littleton vet. Danny Philip Dietz, Sr. laid to rest beside son, a national hero. In a moving coincidence, two military jets flew over the heads of more than 100 people at Fort Logan National Cemetery, just as the sound of taps started to float through the air. It was the burial ceremony for Danny Philip Dietz, Sr., a veteran of the U.S. Navy and a passionate servant to at-risk youth. Dietz, who lived in Littleton, passed away on May 11th at the age of 75. He was laid to rest next to his son, Danny Philip Dietz, Jr., a Navy SEAL who was awarded the Navy's second highest decoration, the Navy Cross, and the Purple Heart after his combat death in Afghanistan in 2005. Senior was my hero, said Henry Jones, Jr., a retired Denver police officer who counted Dietz as a friend. He would do anything for you. He'd give you the shirt off his back. Dietz was born in Nebraska and raised his family in the Littleton-Englewood area. He served in the Navy from December 1, 1967 to November 30, 1971 and was stationed at Camp Lejeune, said his daughter Tiffany Bitts. After the death of his son, Dietz and Bitts started the Danny Dietz Jr. Foundation to, quote, enrich the lives of youth and young adults through strenuous mental and physical activities, end quote, according to the foundation's website. My brother, he might have been considered an at-risk youth in his young days, Bitts said. While he was a good kid and had a good heart, he oftentimes found himself going down the wrong path at times. Bitts said many people told her brother he would never amount to anything. All it took was someone to believe in him, she said, and he ended up serving the country and becoming a national hero. After we lost my brother, we wanted to start a foundation to find kids who were like my brother, that maybe they just needed a little direction or guidance or even just a loving hand, Bitts said. They had good in them, and they just needed somebody to tell them that and help them find their purpose. Bitts said her father was very passionate about the foundation and its work with youth. Dietz's friend, Jones, said he was inspired by how his friend taught the kids to serve their country, whether through military or community service. What he teaches you is there's more to life than yourself, Jones said. Bitts said her father was a strong patriot. Even when things got tough and challenging, she said, he wanted to remind people of the greatness of living in the United States. He loved this country, she said. He loves what we stand for, and he wanted to ensure that others understood how beautiful we have it. Even beyond serving youth, Dietz lived his life to build connections with others, Bitts said. Veterans who might have been suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder, he would spend countless hours just trying to help them see the good in themselves and why they matter and why they're important and that they have a purpose, she said. As highlighted by the mass of people who attended his committal ceremony at Fort Logan on May 29th, Dietz had a superpower in building relationships. He found purpose in making connections, and through those connections, helping people, she said. I really feel like that was my dad's true purpose, was just to make connections and help people see the good in themselves and the value that they bring. Littleton Mobile Home Park residents get closer to making offer on land. Meadowood Village residents will receive $225,000 in financial support from city. The residents of Meadowood Village, a mobile home park in Littleton, have learned that the city will provide $225,000 in financial support to help them make an offer on the land beneath their homes. The residents of the park, located on the west side of Santa Fe Drive, just north of Breckenridge Brewery, received notice in January of a corporation's intent to buy the park. Fearing displacement due to redevelopment of increased rents and fees, the residents formed a cooperative to try to buy the park themselves, per a Colorado law that offers them 120 days after notice of a potential sale to make their own offer. The Meadowood Cooperative asked for financial assistance from Littleton, Arapahoe County, and the Colorado Department of Local Affairs. Littleton City Manager Jim Blecklenburg said at a city council study session this week that the city does not currently have housing purchase subsidies funding to grant the residents' original $2.6 million request to help them buy the land. Instead, the council directed staff to contribute $225,000, some of which will be refunded to go toward earnest money and pre-purchased expenses. Providing this money will unlock a period of time for the residents to identify other funding sources to fund a potential purchase. The residents have done absolutely everything they can, and they have told us from the beginning, do what we are hearing from the president down, protect low-income housing, said District 4th Council Member Andrea Peters. I think this is giving them a shot to do that. Sandy Cook, a resident serving on Meadowood Cooperative's interim board, said she was pleased with the city's decision to fund the residents' earnest and pre-purchased cost. Certainly, we would have appreciated more, but they don't have it, and I understand that, she said. But what they've done right now has put us to a position that we're going to be able to get to the next hurdle, and without this, we wouldn't have made it. The Meadowood Cooperative has to make an offer by June 18th, she said, with which they have to put down $200,000 in earnest money. If the seller accepts the offer, the residents have 2 to 3 months to do, quote, due diligence, end quote, including inspections, she said. During this time, the cooperative can continue to gather funding. Cook said the cooperative is still waiting on funding responses from the Department of Local Affairs and several other groups. Arapahoe County is providing $50,000 to the Meadowood Cooperative to assist with pre-purchase costs and has also offered to do pro bono appraisals if needed for the sale, Becklenburg said. Resident Lee Comstock, who attended the study session, said he was disappointed the city didn't provide more money to help his community. I just see how much money is in this city, and they say they can't really help us, he said. I mean, they want to, but in a minimal way. Similar situation at Woolhurst, also in Littleton, just a few miles south of Meadowood, another mobile home park called Woolhurst is facing a similar challenge. Woolhurst's resident cooperative made an offer on their park in October, which was rejected. According to Claudia Curry Hill, a resident serving on the Woolhurst Cooperative Interim Board, the seller wouldn't accept the terms the lender needed to lend money for the sale. Because of the rejection of the terms, the resident said they no longer have the support of a lender and will likely not be able to make another offer. They said Meadowood is at an earlier point in the process, and the city's financial support of Meadowood will only help if their offer is accepted. We're fingers crossed for Meadowood that they can make it happen, Hill said. Debbie Fitzgerald, who also serves on the Woolhurst Cooperative Interim Board, said the board wants to keep working to help residents, even if the park is sold. My goal would be to ensure that the people who live here now can live out their days without the constant strife and worry about what the lot rent is going to be or how they're going to get food, she said. If we can help with that, that's really our goal. Becklenburg said the city has been working with Woolhurst residents and assured them the city would be supportive of legislation that could help control cost. The city has also offered to connect the residents with other grant-making organizations if needed, he said. During Tuesday's study session, some city council members expressed interest in establishing rental assistance programs to help if similar situations arrive in the future. Becklenburg said that idea will be included in future discussions about the city's role in affordable housing. Challenges of resident ownership. During the study session, Mayor Pro Tem Stephen Barr said he supported providing funding to Meadowood, but warned the residents of the complexity of what they are trying to do. I'm not saying this can't be done. I'm just saying it is a huge amount of work and dedication to run a cooperative, he said, adding that his own community is run by a similar model, and it's challenging. He said owning and maintaining a property includes legal, engineering, utilities, capital improvement, cutting lawns, fixing sewer pipes, and sometimes evicting people. The Meadowood Cooperative Board member said they and their community are fully aware of the challenges ahead, but they feel prepared to face them. This board has talked about every one of those situations and what the possibilities are and what the struggles are going to be, said David Stroder, who is on the interim cooperative board. They added that the nonprofit Thistle, which is helping them make an offer, as well as the city and county, have offered resources to help the Meadowood Cooperative figure out next steps if the purchase goes through. Studer also said Meadowood only has 121 people, and pretty much everyone is on board with the purchase and ready to run the cooperative together. With the support of our community, we've got a lot of backing. We've got a lot of good people, a lot of people that can fill different avenues for us, Cook said. Even with a challenging and complicated road ahead, Cook said the Meadowood Cooperative Board's work is all for a worthy cause, their own community, which they love deeply. We have 121 people who are counting on this working so that they can afford to stay in their homes, she said. I think all of us are going to agree that no matter what we have to do to ensure that they're going to be able to stay in their homes and afford to stay in their homes, we're just going to have to put in the work to make sure that's done. Arapahoe County pothole repair requests nearly double. Many roads in, quote, poor, end quote, condition. Official, quote, we are unable to keep up, end quote, by Nina Joss. Arapahoe County's roads and bridges are in trouble. One measure, potholes. The number of pothole repair requests in the county nearly doubled last year. That's according to the county's top public works official, who says a backlog of more than $360 million of maintenance and transportation projects is to blame. After the county has been sounding the alarm bells about its budget shortfall for the past year, its transportation infrastructure report card highlights myriad problems tracked in 2023 as consequences of the budgetary woes. Paved roads, traffic signs, bike lanes, crosswalks, and guardrails are generally in, quote, poor, end quote, condition, the report states. Fixes will require significant future investment above the current budget, the report adds. Brian Weimer, the county's director of public works and development, said the challenges are tied to the county's current budget situation. Amid inflation, population growth, increasing demand for services and revenue limitations, the county is facing a, quote, significant budget shortfall, end quote, according to its budget website. To maintain a balanced budget each year, the county has relied on a patchwork of federal and state funding and grants, put off all but the most critical maintenance and made significant reductions across the board, Weimer said in an email to the Littleton Independent. Many of our assets are on a downward trend due to the budget constraints we face, and we are unable to keep up by relying on our existing resources. In recent months, Weimer said the county has had to make difficult decisions about which projects to prioritize and defer. One example from last year came when 15 county roadways were washed out or damaged by flooding, Weimer said. The Public Works Department had to divert resources from planned improvement projects to repair the roadways, which were, quote, completely impassable or unsafe to travel on, end quote, he said. The flooding took funding from planned projects, and these projects continue to further deteriorate, he said. The county has budgeted about $9 million to address transportation and infrastructure maintenance projects in 2024, Weimer said. According to the report, it would cost the county an additional $70 million to bring every asset to a, quote, good, end quote, rating. Snow fences, which are barriers to minimize the amount of snow drift on roadways, are also in poor condition, according to the report. About 41% of county roads are in, quote, poor, end quote, condition, while 59% are in, quote, fair, end quote, or, quote, good, end quote, condition, according to the report. Assets that are in, quote, fair, end quote, condition are not in as dire of condition as the, quote, poor, end quote, rated assets, but will need future investment above the current budget to recover to the targeted condition. Gravel roads and bridges are both rated, quote, fair, end quote, in the report. The county has 37 bridges with an average age of 42 years, the report says. Although the Colorado Department of Transportation's biannual bridge health rating is not yet available, according to the report, the county's bridges have been meeting standards, but declining since 2015. Weimer said a, quote, poor, end quote, rating does not mean an asset is unsafe, but improvements are needed and will be more expensive to repair the longer the county waits. As roadways deteriorate, it costs more to fix them than it takes to keep good roads in good conditions, he said. It costs roughly $14 per square yard to maintain a good roadway, but to bring a poor road to a good condition costs 7 to 10 times more. He said the number of pothole repair requests in the county increased from 153 in 2022 to 293 in 2023. Overall service requests to roads and bridges for various assets increased 67% from 2022 to 2023, he added. These are great examples of what happens when we defer maintenance, he said. The problems continue to add up. Without an increase in revenue, the report says, county leadership will be forced to make more significant cuts in services. To address its budget concerns, the county is considering several potential solutions, including a ballot measure to eliminate its tax revenue limit, or one proposing a county sales tax. The county recently launched a new community survey to gather input from residents on these options. The survey will be available at https://acbudget.com/ until June 3rd. Weimer said these potential solutions would address deferred transportation infrastructure and repair and maintenance needs over 5 to 10 years. Thank you for joining us for the Arapahoe County News. My name is Tim Elliott.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.